Good day, listeners. This is your host, Michael Martins, with the Martins Critical Review, broadcasting this morning from a nearly bluebird day here in south-central British Columbia. In today's program, we will cover some of the fundamental factors required to maintain a free and sovereign state, one which is prosperous in abundance for its inhabitants and free from dangerous leftist woke ideology. We'll also identify the greatest threats to our democracy and freedom, which are growing in prevalence in today's society. Joining us for today's episode is Dr. Mark Sherwood. Dr. Sherwood was born in Tulsa, Oklahoma, and raised in nearby Berry Hill. He is a former state and regional bodybuilding champion and ex-professional baseball player. Dr. Sherwood is a certified naturopathic doctor, and together with his wife, Michelle Neal Sherwood, a doctor of osteopathy, founded the Functional Medical Institute, a full-time wellness-based medical practice in Tulsa, Oklahoma. Dr. Sherwood is also a 24-year retired veteran of the Tulsa Police Department, where he logged a decade of courageous service on the department's SWAT team. During his tenure there, he exemplified the concept of being the first one to go through the door and face whatever challenge was on the other side. At the Functional Medical Institute, Dr. Sherwood and his wife have adopted a whole-person approach, which is an outcome-based philosophy and looks at each individual's unique needs. Their goal is to lead people down a pathway of true healing by first eradicating all self-imposed, choice-driven disease conditions, and second, to eliminate the usage of unnecessary medications. The Sherwoods have co-authored three Amazon number one best-selling books, Together, The Quest for Wellness, Fork Your Diet, and Surviving the Garden of Eden. They have also appeared on national TV, been quoted on CNN, featured on CBN, and are regular contributors of many national publications. Dr. Sherwood, you're quite an accomplished individual. Welcome to the show. It's an honor to be able to speak with you today, and thank you for your time.
Michael, thanks for having me. I've been looking forward to this and really, really honored to be with you.
Well, thank you so much, sir. So I got to say, first, when I received your booking agent's request to have you on my show, I was intrigued solely on the basis of discussing your position on the Second Amendment. However, in conducting my research, I realized that there's a treasure trove of topics to cover here. So maybe if we can begin today with you sharing some of your background with the listeners, getting to learn about more who the young Dr. Sherwood was and what motivations drove that young person to make the life decisions that you did.
Well, as a young man, I was adopted, and I've been very much of a proponent of pro-life, because a lot of people don't understand that I did meet my birth mother, and I was a product of a statutory rape or worse, depending on how people would view the situation. And so, my life's not a mistake. So I was adopted into a home of great parents, only child, a little dysfunctional, though, like any home is. And my mother, tragically so, got addicted to some pain pills, ended up taking her own life, which really took part of my life away from me, in a sense. But I tell you what, I had to grow up quick, and a lot of tragedies came my way, of course, and learn through that. So I've kind of been an overachiever, a person who sort of takes on every uphill battle that's their way, a person who strives when people tell me you can't do that or it cannot be done. And of course, that led me down the pathway of becoming a professional baseball player prior to becoming a police officer. And then during my time in the police department, I was also for 12 years a part of the world famous power team that went around the country and broke bricks and bent steel and blew a pot water bottle all to give the gospel message. So, but as a young man, I wasn't the most talented person in the world, but there was nobody that was going to work harder than I was to achieve whatever I'd set my mind to. So that's still driven me today to kind of be an overachiever. And to tell people that no matter what you think you can't do, let your dreams be big enough to give the bar high enough to achieve it. Because when you believe it enough, you can achieve it.
Yeah, that's interesting. And certainly we see in this day and age that so many of these, let's call them marginalized or people from a difficult background, either make that just that positive decision to really push hard and exceed and excel. Or, of course, some of them go the other way. But it's unfortunate that so many people who are in a position of privilege, Hunter Biden might be the prime example of just squandering those opportunities and going nowhere with it. And so, I honor you for coming from that difficult background and making something your life. That's great. So you've given us some of your highlights there from your police career. But what was the most difficult or challenging situation that you encountered during your service career? And what was the most rewarding memory that you have during your career?
From a challenging standpoint, Michael, you know, people don't understand police officers. They get criticized so much today, and it frankly just drives me up a wall because, you know, you don't know what it's like to go out there and stop a car in the middle of the night, you know, not knowing who's behind that wheel and who might take your life. So you're taught in a way that the world is a dangerous place. And so, you know, that's the most enlightening thing that I can give people. You know, don't be a Monday morning quarterback unless you put on that vest and carry that gun. Two words for you, shut up, you know, because you don't have a valuable opinion in my opinion. Now, having said that, you know, getting shot at, staring down the barrel of a gun, you know, watching people die. I remember one thing that was the most tragic thing I ever saw. I watched a man that we had to take his life, right, because of a hostage situation. And I watched as I went up on him, you know, as he was laying on the ground, I had my little machine gun trained on him. I watched him on this probably 50 degree Fahrenheit night, just inhale and exhale. And I watched his breath come out of him. And I watched that last breath, and I never forgot that. I mean, it traumatized me on one hand, but on the other hand, makes you realize that life is a precious and delicate thing. Now, on the rewarding side of things, you learn that God has gifted many, many people with skills to go into the worst situation in people's life. Good person, bad person, it's irrelevant. But you're seeing them in the worst potential situation, and they're looking for answers. And when you go on a scene and you're able to bring sense to a lack of sense situation and sanity to an insane situation, and have someone come up to you and say those two key words, thank you. I mean, there's something to that, to be able to help people in a time of great, great calamity, catastrophe, and need. And even to this day, there's nothing that gives me greater reward than seeing a person go from the most horrendous situation to a very hopeful situation.
And I think that's really the key of policing, is that de-escalation of the situation, and people who are in chaos and in a conflict or a traumatic situation, having the wherewithal to de-escalate that situation, bring people back into reason. And then a lot of time the problem goes away, because when you're irrational, you don't have that reasoning ability anymore.
Yeah, that's true. And a lot of people need to know that in every corporate setting, every business, there's always bad apples. And part of my job in the police academy during my last time in my career was training these young officers. And so, you know, I would train them to not escalate a situation and not activate force, because you're always bringing a gun and making it a gunfight where whatever you do. So before you lay hands on anybody, check your ego and realize that when you lay hands on them, you've just escalated it. So I was always teaching them that verbal warfare is the best kind of warfare to put into place, so that you can bring a situation down. And when somebody's yelling at you, the best thing you can do is bring your voice down, calm them, slow down the tempo. And these are skills that I wish many of our politicians and world leaders would put into place today.
Absolutely. So I just wanted to unpack something that you said, where you're walking up to this car at night, you get a traffic stop. Just relay that experience. I mean, you know, you're obviously, you have no idea what's going on there. Maybe you've checked the license plate. I mean, is your heart beating in your chest, or walk us through something like that?
Yeah. You know, police officers are taught, correctly so, that you're one breath away from not going home at night. And everything you show up to, whether you initiate a traffic stop or show up to a call for service, it's people that you're intruding on their own freedoms, liberties, etc. And so there's always that uncertainty that goes there. And you need to be aware of it, because if you don't have, Michael, a high level of awareness, cortisol, perception, and in tune awareness of what's going on outside of you, you will die. I mean, police officers have to live with this higher sense of awareness than anybody else. And that's why they don't live very long, post-retirement. You know, they live 20 years less than the average human being today post-retirement. But, you know, your heart, you've learned to control the breath, but you haven't and never need to turn down the level of awareness. So your level of awareness is perhaps here as an officer, where everybody else's is here. To put it into a current situation, it took me 5 years post-retirement, more or less, to be able to go in a restaurant with my wife and sit down with my back facing the door. And, you know, that's the way they live. And most of them are on high blood pressure medications, you know, diabetes medications, sleep medications. That's very, very common because of this hypercortisolism or hyper alertness, which basically weakens the immune system and just decapitates the ability of our body to build health.
Interesting. Interesting. So would you agree that to anyone that's not asleep at the wheel, it's pretty clear that the unelected globalists are controlling our puppet politicians and driving our free Western democracies towards a Marxist totalitarian reality?
I do. People need to wake up and understand that we as a world, you know, in your country, mine, whatever, as a world, when we give people too much power and we centralize power to take it away from the people, decentralizing power away from the people, said another way, we give people this ability to sort of embrace this totalitarian, egotistical, self-applauding process of leadership. And it's not leadership, it's dictatorship. And this is important. Our rights get taken away and the rights get transferred into privileges. When the rights get transferred into privileges, we're living in a state of tyranny. When the rights are preserved, we're living in a state of freedom. And we are perilously on a trajectory, Michael, to go into a world dictatorship, one world government with people rights being degraded into nothing more than occasional and increasingly limiting privileges.
Yeah, I mean, you've described the situation in Canada to a T, especially the self-applauding leadership. I mean, between the provincial buffoons and the federal buffoons, I mean, it's shameful. And you know, when you describe these properties that policemen have and these abilities that they have, I mean, I don't think there's a single politician across Canada that even comes close to any of those skills or attributes. I mean, it's truly shameful.
It is. And I think the key point in understanding, and I've encouraged law enforcement across this whole world and across this land to respectfully but forcefully refuse and rebel against following unlawful, immoral, ungodly, and unethical orders. I don't care who gives them to you. You have that duty to do that, not just for the people you're swearing to protect, but for the people that are giving you those unlawful orders. That is a hill that every single person, law enforcement, military, need to die on.
Yeah, unfortunately, that message isn't being widely received. I think the reaction there is, I have a mortgage and kids to feed, and I have to continue doing this job, no matter what. I mean, not sure what it's like in your neck of the woods, but the number of law enforcement officers who are on stressed leave right now is very high. I even notice on the highways, the level of traffic enforcement is at a probably 5 to 10 year low. I mean, you simply don't see any police officers out there, and I can only assume that that's because either their budgets have been blown, or they simply don't have enough officers to bear or man the shifts to a bare degree, bare minimum degree.
It's probably three pronged. Shifts have been, there's not enough people, not enough money. But I've seen this across this country, and I have a lot of friends in your country, Canada as well, in law enforcement. Morale is like tanked. It's at an all-time low. I've never seen it like this. Most law enforcement officers and even the applications for jobs in law enforcement are really low, and they're having a hard time filling that. And even with our military, you know, not only can they not fulfill it physically, but they don't want to be there because they don't want to put up with all that nonsense that they have to put up with.
For sure, for sure. Yeah, that's interesting, of course. The parallels between the two countries. We didn't have that defund the police nonsense that occurred, or the, there was in Eastern Canada, there were some BLM, there weren't riots here, but there were some supporting movements. We haven't gone as crazy with that defund the police movement as we have. Of course, we saw, just south of us here in Seattle and further south in Portland. I mean, that was, full on crazy. I mean, that was, we're talking about a January 6th insurrection at the Capitol. I mean, the two instances are diametrically opposed in terms of the violence and the vehemence and what happened there, right? So is this situation that we find ourselves in today the exact situation the forefathers of the United States of America created the Constitution for, and in particular the Second Amendment?
It is. When you look at the idea of our founding fathers of this country, and really the concept of freedom as we sort of even in Canada identify, right? When they saw what was happening with an oppressive monarchy, an oppressive tyrannical leadership in Britain, with the king there saying, "You will do things my way, you will pay the taxes the way I want to, and you will worship, very importantly, the way we want to, the way that we want you to." And it was an overreach. And certainly the 13 colonies were there, but the key point is only 56 people signed the Declaration of Independence. And that literally, Michael, was a death warrant potentially for each of them. I, Mark Sherwood, and I am fully invested in telling you who I am, and I'm opposing you along with these other 55 people. That's what that looked like. And so, through the courage of those 56, we have now this idea of the Constitutional Republic that we have in America. And we're right there right now. We really are. And not everybody's going to sign that document, but there is a few leaders out there that are willing to step up and, as you mentioned in the intro, go in that door first, knowing full well that they were made for that, and knowing full well that other people are not, but they will follow you in that door. So we have got to get ready in a way to understand this. And the Second Amendment is the only amendment that within the amendment, it tells you why we have the amendment. It's for the security of the free state. And so securing means to hang on to it. The free state means to protect our freedoms against tyrannical, governmental, and even authoritarian, totalitarian overreach.
Well, that's an interesting little bit of history that I wasn't aware of, and it gives me actually a little bit of glimmer of hope. I'm one of 19 plaintiffs that's suing the federal and provincial governments here.
Good.
The government has ignored us thus far, but we have a very strong case. There's 18 to 20,000 pages of expert testimony, basically pushing back against the plandemic and the PCR testing and the rest of the measures. So that's interesting that I didn't realize that it was only 56 people that had signed that and created the freest nation on earth and possibly the greatest society that we've had in our modern time. So we've kind of covered this a little bit, but I want to dig a little bit deeper. So the my understanding about the Second Amendment really is less about possessing firearms for the protection of your home against an intruder, but again, more of a tool to create a balance between the citizenry and potential government which seeks to oppress and install a totalitarian regime. Is that my correct understanding there?
It is. And just historically, you look at when we saw Japan, for example, bomb Pearl Harbor, way back, many, many decades ago. There was a reason they did not invade the land called America, because people had guns. They knew they couldn't win. And because of that very concept, America, or at least the United States as we know it, will never be destroyed from the outside in through an invasion on land. Never. It won't be, because we're now seeing, the irony of it all. We're seeing the goofiness of the Biden administration providing arms to Ukraine to defend their own land while they're trying to take guns away from America. It's the dichotomy that is insanity in what we're seeing in our world. And so the ability to hang on to your firearms and really not just protect the home, but the idea that the government says, and I'm probably being very oversimplified with this, but the idea that the government says, "Hey, we don't want to aggravate those people too much because we don't want to have them fighting back." And the government's fear of the people is actually the very definition of freedom. And that's what's happening even in your country. You know, you saw the people didn't have the ability really to fight back. And I certainly commend you and I congratulate you and I encourage you. You being one of those 19, man, you are going to go down in history. Not that you're about that, but you're going to go down in history as a person that stood in the gap against tyranny.
Yeah, and it's so important, and that's you know, that's very much the case. And it's interesting, you know, when you mentioned the arms to Ukraine versus what we have going on at home, and of course, you know, the other intrinsic portion of that is protecting their borders from foreign invaders. And I mean, it's, you know, the you're having an invasion at the southern border, and we'll get into that a little bit later on. But you know, through the course of my research on this topic, you know, America does have a fairly large number of total gun-related deaths, numbering some 37,000 for 2019. And within that number, the homicides are about 14,000, and the balance is suicide, and then obviously the rest of it is just accidental deaths. But when we look at the number of gun-caused homicide rate in the U.S., it ranks number 35 in the world, behind many of the Caribbean and Latin American nations. However, we see that between heart disease and cancer, there's about 1.3 million deaths in America. So, you know, my question to you is what is more dangerous here, firearms or poor lifestyle choices?
The standard American diet / Western lifestyle is killing more people than ever before in the history of our world. And guess what? It was developed right here in good old-fashioned United States of America. We did it. The United States government subsidizes these poor foods through breads, grains, corn, soy, et cetera, you know, and they developed this thing called the food pyramid for people that have like a kind of biblical mindset, understand that the pyramid is a symbol of the Egyptian architecture. You know, the Egyptians had God's people in bondage, and now the government put us all back in bondage by this standard American lifestyle that's contributing to these deaths. And you mentioned 1.3 million per year. If you project those stats out into, you know, into the future up to 2050, statistics that I've looked at, you're going to see the disease prevalence in each individual person growing faster than the entire population growth of North America. So diseases are getting more common, more pharmaceutical usage, more common, and therein lies the problem with the influence of big pharma within education, within lobbying groups, and within media. And the whole idea of deflection of that guns are creating this is nothing more than the epitome of absurdity.
Yeah, it's a smokescreen for sure. And I think that iatrogenic deaths rank number three after those two, which again is, you know, that's basically death by medicine. So there's another problem there.
Yeah.
And you know, clearly, as you've stated, if the government really cared about the citizenry, they would promote a healthy lifestyle. And, we'd be banning things like glyphosate and high fructose corn syrup and, encouraging people to lower their BMI and get out there and be exercising and so forth, right? It's a very bizarre situation that we find ourselves in. So for gentlemen like you and I that understand what's going on, we can only shake your head. I mean, it's so preposterous as to what's going on out there.
Yeah, I shake my head every day. You know, we hear, the bombardment in the media about how many people are dying from COVID, for example, and I don't want any death to occur. I mean, I grieve at all, no question. But you look into the data and even the comorbidities there. You know, you got AIDS, you got obesity, you got type 2 diabetes, or even you put those words together, this diabesity crisis. And by the way, obesity is the fastest growing non-communicable disease in the world. And that is shocking when you look. You mentioned glyphosate. You know, glyphosate, which is in the process of all of our subsidized grain, corn, and soy products within the concept of probably North America now at this point in time, heavily, heavily laden with these obesogenic chemicals and even estrogenic chemicals, which can basically give more estrogen to, you know, both sexes meet reaching puberty faster, getting fatter faster, and creating this dynamic, Michael, that makes boys more like girls. And man, you're seeing that go across our world, which is shocking. And it boggles my mind that even we're having a logical conversation, that the majority of leaders will put a sock on our mouths and will try to suppress the information. And it is nothing more than propaganda control, a la the Nazi regime under Hitler.
Sure, sure. And of course, I mean, with your bodybuilding background, I'm sure you're aware that the greater your body fat percentage goes as a male, the lower your testosterone goes. And I think I saw some statistics saying that the average 18-year-old these days has the same amount of testosterone as a 50-year-old did in the 1950s. So, you know, there's an issue. It's not, there's also a physiological component to this crazy ideas of the transgenderism and the reason why young men are questioning, you know, whether they should sit or stand to pee. I mean, they literally don't have the biochemical components within their body to make those decisions. I mean, it's so in some ways, you know, the society has been influencing them, but their diet and their physiology is also contributing to some of these problems.
Yeah, there's no question. And a lot of people have just disregarded that whole idea. And then you go into the depression issue, which is coupled with a lack of nutrition. And I can verify what you just said. We've seen that in our clinical analyses over the last decade that my wife and I have been doing this. We've seen the testosterone baseline level in men decline rapidly. And of course, obesity's gone up. And even in ladies, I must point out that ladies are reaching menopause faster, leaving them hormoneless faster. And then you pull that together with the loss of hormones. What does that mean? That means more bone loss, more brain loss, more depression, and more obesity. And then that's going to lead to emotional catastrophe, where people will begin to do this emotional eating nonsense, which is going to lead them on the pathway to addictive foods.
Yeah, that's an interesting clinical observation. And back to the gun control issue, one of the other very important statistics that I uncovered here was we have, for 2021, the numbers have just been released for drug overdoses, which stand at 108,000, which is almost four times the number of gun deaths. 80% of those are coming from opiates, and 90% of the opiate deaths are involving the synthetic opiate fentanyl. So, you know, really, if the leftists were so concerned about people, they would look to halt this illegal immigration and the illicit drug trade that comes hand in hand with an uncontrolled open border. I mean, it's just sort of logical, wouldn't you think?
Yeah, and this is interesting. I haven't got to share this but a few times. So this is information from on the ground in Oklahoma as per about 1.5 months ago. We have an open border just south of us at the state of Texas. We all know where the geographic location is. Oklahoma is just north of Texas in the United States. Well, there is a major highway structure between states, these intrastate highways that provide an access of these illegal immigrants and drug traffickers into various parts of the U.S. and even Canada, right? And so what happens is you get this influx. And in Oklahoma, we have a horrific problem. I know we're going to talk about this, about the CCP, the Chinese Communist Party, owning massive amounts of land, 300,000 acres in Oklahoma to be exact. But the CCP is also now in cahoots with the cartel. And in Oklahoma, a month and a half ago, there was an 11-kilogram bust of fentanyl. Wow. Now, for those people that don't have an idea what that means, that's enough fentanyl to kill 4.5 million people, roughly the whole state of Oklahoma. And that stuff is being pushed into our borders by the cartel under the nose and personally with the okay of this clown-in-chief administration we have right now in this country. And that stuff shouldn't be in our country. It shouldn't be in anybody's country. And we need really, we need to have a heavy law enforcement attack point on that. Back to our point earlier, funding, motivation, and purpose. And they have none of those at this point.
Yeah, that's interesting. And I mean, 11 kilograms of fentanyl, I mean, that should be a national emergency. You know,
totally.
That's plain and simple. That is a clear and present danger to the survival and well-being of every American in the country.
Yeah, it is. And you look at the problem with it, with fentanyl in general. Let's couple that back with a pandemic. We were taught to isolate, get away from people, don't touch anybody. People are dangerous. But did you know that people need a hug? They get this wonderful chemical called oxytocin to make sure that they're not depressed. Isolation from people leads to domination with depression. And I hope people understand that. Isolation from people, domination from depression, because we need to have some sort of interaction because that's why we're made.
Yeah, absolutely. So, does the gun control lobby really have any comprehensive facts to show that America would be a safer place without gun ownership?
No, you look at cities like Chicago, Illinois, which has some of the tightest gun control laws, and they have more homicides pretty much every day than any other city in America. The bottom line is, and this is a powerful statement, I know people have said this, and I can speak to it with my experience in law enforcement. Guns don't kill people, people kill people. The largest mass murders in American history were done with fertilizer and airplanes. Look, people are going to kill. The very first murder that we see in the Bible was done with a rock. And so know that you can't legislate morality into a person, nor can you legislate homicidal tendencies out of people. It really results in a more of an education standpoint and an appreciation and a revaluing of life. And we're not doing that because with video games and TV and all this, we're glorifying homicide. We're glorifying bloodshed. And these children that we see in school are not being educated anymore, whether it be your country or mine. They're being indoctrinated into the next generation of people that don't value life, starting with themselves.
Interesting. Interesting. Chairman Mao Zedong once famously said that political power grows out of the barrel of a gun. So what's really more dangerous here, armed law-abiding citizens or a tyrannical government intending on total domination of the citizenry?
Tyrannical governments are far more dangerous to our world right now than anything else. If you take a well-armed citizenry, that is the greatest deterrent to crime, and it's also the greatest deterrent to global overreach. This is critical. I've said it many times before. I don't give a rip what Biden does regarding any treaty, or even the federal government regarding any treaty. America and the way we lay it out here, the state's sovereignty as per the 10th Amendment, I know we'll talk about that probably, but the idea of it is the sovereignty of these states is much like little countries. We have the ability to push back and the ability to bear arms or preserve the ability to bear arms and keep arms gives us pardon the play on words, the trump card against them. And that puts that little fear, it puts a doubt there. And as long as we can maintain that edge, we'll win. But when we lose the edge, we've already lost.
Yes. So about 40% of my audience is Canadian based, and about 25% American, and the rest is sort of worldwide. And I say that because here in Canada, we don't have the same relationship with firearms that you do in America. And the regionality of who has firearms versus who doesn't is very diverse across the country. But the argument here, of course, and it's probably similar to there, is that, if we didn't have guns and these, we wouldn't have any of these gun crimes. And this is, of course, ridiculous because if you are a gang member or criminal, you're not going to your local gun dealer to buy that handgun that you're then going to go to the mall to shoot your rival gang members with. And so so now in Canada we've enacted or will very soon come is a handgun ban. Presently, the only legal purpose to have a handgun, it has to be trigger locked inside of another box, inside of a safe. You have to contact the police to go to the range to use it. There's no other permissible uses unless you have a guide outfitter license and you can carry a firearm as a sidearm in the field for safety. So, this is a obviously ridiculous, and I don't understand, and maybe you can have some insights there as to why the left thinks or so naive to think that criminals are going to gun stores to buy their firearms to conduct their crimes. I mean, are they just simply that naive, or what do you think there?
They're politicians. Politicians crave money, power, and they don't want to lose it. They don't want to give it back to the people. And the ability to control people with manipulative terms like they're doing, saying that, well, you take away guns, you'll lower the gun deaths. Well, obviously, you know, their premise is you pull the guns away from all citizens. But as you mentioned, criminals don't obey the law. They never have. That's what makes them criminals. And so, you know, we're actually lending ourselves to a domino cascade of a citizen being less protected. And in Canada, I would encourage massive citizens, anybody should apply for a guide license at this point in time and sort of take up a second job so that they can go out in the field pretty much every day, you know, and that would really screw everybody up with that law, wouldn't it?
Well, yeah, but something's got to shift for sure. So I think we can agree that America is facing a problem of deranged, mentally ill citizens taking out their grievances on their fellow citizens with firearms. Given this high rate of arms ownership and availability in both the Middle East and Africa, that region seems to be devoid of such actions, these mass shootings. Why is this the case? And do you feel that the over-medication of psychotropic pharmaceutical drugs could be to blame for some of these actions in America?
I do. One in four citizens in America are on antidepressant drugs at this point. That's a tragic number. We saw back in June of 2020 at the height of the pandemic, Zoloft, the antidepressant drug, went on back order. So we also saw the increase, alcoholism, suicide, you know, drug use, et cetera. All this went up as well, along with domestic violence. And so, you know, we see the catastrophe of this. But a little known thing that I think people didn't understand is that none of us are born with antidepressant, antipsychotropic, or psychotropic drug deficiency. We're not born that way. So we're actually going out the wrong direction. And so I look at it from a standpoint of a process called methylation, which is a biochemical process inside the body. And that's for people that are listening right now, methylation. But within that process, we get the synthesis of two well-known neurotransmitters, serotonin and dopamine. With serotonin, we're not depressed. With dopamine, we feel pretty much rewarded. And unfortunately, that system has a high requirement for B vitamins and magnesium. And we don't get that in the standard American diet. We don't get that in school foods. We get anti-nutrient-laden foods, non-nutrient-related foods, and inflammatory foods that create diseases. So we're actually creating the depression. We're going about solving it the wrong way, and it's screwing people's brains up where they can't even rationally think anymore, and they go in this numb mode. And a suicidal depressed person is nothing more than a homicide waiting to happen.
That's a very interesting understanding of that. I mean, and it makes sense. And so this is now a descending concentric spiral and needs to be halted. And really, it's somewhat of an easy fix. Once you put that proper nutrition into people's bodies, you know, there's probably a period of 3 to 6 months where they'll begin to feel better. Their lives will turn around almost by magic.
Yeah, no question. And we see it all the time. We have people come to us from really all around the world. And, you know, we tell them, don't go cold turkey. That's very important. But we get a plan, however long it takes, to begin to build up these stores, including amino acids, certain ones that create these neurotransmitters. And then we can get a weaning schedule off depending on how long they've been on it, the type of drug they've been on, et cetera. So that is the goal. And you met it in the intro. That's what we try to do, to bring less dependence upon big pharma and more dependence upon this idea of self-governance or caring for ourselves. That's what we need to get to.
Well, yeah, what a strange concept if we were teaching our school children this type of information instead of gender fluidity and the rest of the rubbish. You know, how much further would we be along here? So what are your thoughts when you hear bullshit Biden tell us that the constitutional amendments are not absolute?
When I hear the terms like that, I think that, one, I'll just be straight. I think he's an idiot. I think he's completely unqualified for that job. I think most politicians holding office right now in America are unqualified because they don't know the Constitution. The Constitution is really like the Bible to Christians. It's a document that is the word that's generated from a divine providence. Even the founders of the Constitution will say that. And we know the author of the Bible is God. And if you really follow those principles, life goes pretty well. It really does. But unfortunately, the founders put that document together to prevent and sort of put a cap on his type of thinking. And in America, we've done this. I've used this analogy in many, many interviews, that the states, in our federalism concept, the states and the people are like the parents, and the federal government's like the child. And you know, in a family dynamic, when you give the child too much power,
yes,
it's like giving them a Maserati with keys and an unlimited credit card. Well, they're going to crash it, they're going to hurt themselves, and they're going to hurt you. And that's exactly what's happened. You've got an irresponsible, uneducated, non-mature child and childish concept running our country. And it's our fault. It's our fault. But that is an idiot thing to say. The Constitution is not a fluid document. It's there for a reason, to prevent stupid statements like that.
Well said. So here in Canada, owning an AR-15, that's now a prohibited weapon. And, you know, we hear the rhetoric coming out of your country as well. Why the war against the AR-15, which is a weapon from the 1950s? And you know, we have so many other highly capable semi-automatic firearms.
Well, I think the naivety of perhaps our citizenry in all of North America to believe that AR stands for assault rifle. It doesn't. You know, it's like a brand, right? So the idea behind that is like, this one is the epitome of a machine to kill people. And it's readily available. And I think it's probably got a stigma against us that's completely irrelevant. The AR-15, along with other assault rifles, there are more that would create more damage and even faster and more deadly. And you look inside of even the cartridge of firearms that you use to shoot, those cartridges can be manipulated to actually pierce armor. I mean, so there's all kinds of things that can be done above and beyond the damage inflicted with an AR-15.
Yeah. So it's simply just, it's almost like a poster child that's easy to manipulate.
It's an easy target. It's like out there in the news and, you know, like I look at it like, okay, if you don't like AR-15s, so why don't you just say all assault rifles? And then that's going to really force them to come up with a definition. What's an assault rifle? So it's just an easy target. It's like at the point of the spear. And look, they get that one away, it's going to go after others soon enough, because the criminals are going to find other guns, and including ARs, and they're going to kill people like they always do. They're going to disobey the law like they always do. And then we're back to square one. Okay, we're going to start banning this gun, and then that gun.
Now, then it ends with banning bread knives, because those could be dangerous as well.
Oh, totally. You know, we want to see, and I'm just going to put a phraseology for maybe Trudeau. We want to see all Canadians do exactly what I say when I say to do it, and do things the way I want you to do it. And I'll tell you when to eat. I'll tell you when to sleep. I'll tell you when you can go outside. I'll tell you when you can hug your neighbor. And I'll tell you when you can go to work, and I'll command your wages too. That's where we're going.
Yeah, sure seems that way. So I see from your written statements and policies that you're about as far from woke as it gets. What do you think the real underlying agenda of the wokesters is?
I think they're deceived. They've lost discipline, they've lost the concept of divine providence, of God, like I talked about. And when you get to that point, there's a void in the woke person's heart. They don't feel appreciated. They don't feel loved. They don't feel valued. They probably hate themselves in a sense, or maybe love themselves so much that they don't even know what love for another person is. And because of that, they want to invoke that thought process on everybody else. Said the old saying goes, misery loves company. And I really believe that's happening right now. And so that's their agenda. You know, if you look at any of my policy statements terminology I've used or speeches I've given, I've always talked about loving your neighbor, you know, loving people, care about them, you know, focus on divine providence, divine inspiration, focus on God, focus on the Constitution, focus on biblical principles. But they're not focusing on that. They're actually very anti-divine providence, anti-God. And that puts, guess what, the Godship, the Godhead back on the individual person. And we, as a people, are not meant to handle that, and we will fail miserably by actually killing each other, which we're doing right now.
Yes. Would you agree with the quote, if they can convince you of absurdities, you will allow atrocities?
Yes, many times there has been a sympathetic analysis of a sympathetic arrangement with your hostage taker. You know, we've all heard of that before. You know, you say, well, you know, I can see your cause, you know, and therefore I guess it is them that are trying to hurt us. That's exactly what's happening. We're seeing indoctrination take place before our very eyes, and we really need to understand what it is. And those of us, you know, whether it be the 19 you're talking about or the symbolically 56 here in my country, we need to really bond together and keep each other encouraged so we can fight back every single day.
Yes, absolutely. And so are we nearing this dangerous tipping point towards atrocities within our societies? I mean, are we sort of one step away from whatever may come next?
I think we're less than a step away. I think we're on the edge. And frankly, I believe that America is the last, best, and really only hope to maintain any concept of freedom for the world. You know, we're hanging on to it. The world is watching. You're seeing people in your country, people in Australia rise up, people in Europe rising up and flooding the streets and saying, we're tired of it. And it's about people. And wherever you go, no matter what people believe, you know, they all understand this idea of, man, I just want to be able to go to work, support my family, bless other people, go on a vacation, have a little bit of recreational activity. And I want people to leave me the heck alone. And people are fighting for that. That's the very premise of freedom.
Yes, absolutely. And so what are your thoughts on the WHO's International Pandemic Treaty, and how does the 10th Amendment come into play here with regards to it?
Biden did not have and does not have the authority to negotiate that treaty with the WHO because we, as the states with the 10th Amendment in America, with our Constitution, did not give him that authority. Congressional power is noted in Article 1, Section 8 of the Constitution. The 10th Amendment says, unless we specifically give you those powers, we retain those at the state and local level. So, therefore, his negotiation is an irrelevant thing to the states. And furthermore, Article 2, Section 2 of the United States Constitution, a treaty has to be ratified or approved by two-thirds vote of the Senate. So you've seen different disconnects in this chain of necessary events to make that happen. And even if a treaty was made, which I doubt it could be done because the Senate, there's probably people there that would go, no, time out a minute. That's completely unconstitutional. And I've told the governors around these United States, and I've, you know, tried to lead the way a lot, but I've told them, you know, you stand up, and if the WHO tried to come into your state or a sheriff of the WHO tried to come into your county, you can simply look at them and say, who do you think you are? Leave.
Yes. Yeah, we need more of that. We need more of that leadership and that determination. So what are your thoughts on these medical mandates, such as the vaccine passports and the mask wearing mandates?
Well, masks don't work. Clearly, it looks on the package of any mask, they're not going to prevent virus. Those little fomites are could slide right through there. Further, masks generate moisture from your breath. That makes sense. Everybody knows that if you take a wet rag and wipe it on the table, the moisture is gonna attract and grab on, and it's gonna stick to that. So that's what those masks do. They attract moisture, attract other germs, and create problems. They don't prevent viruses at all. They'll create other health issues. The vaccines, in my opinion, were completely unnecessary because you look at people that were healthy, i.e., the young and the athletic, and you eliminate the comorbidities as we've done over 10,000 times, people don't die. So, therefore, the best immunization is completely getting infection and allowing your body to adapt its normal antibody purpose. Furthermore, I believe those mandates were always unconstitutional, always unnecessary. We have earned the right to put a French fry in your mouth or a salad in your mouth, to walk in front of a moving car or stand on the sidewalk and wait for the car to pass, to turn left across traffic by paying attention, or to turn left causing a collision. We've learned that we can get on an airplane and test fate. It's all about calculation of probabilities of our life. We've earned that right. And so our job as people are to preserve those rights. I can't make someone take an aspirin, nor should we be making someone take a vaccine. We don't make someone go to the hospital when they're sick. They can stay home if they choose to. And so these basic, fundamental, logical, rational freedom decisions should be preserved, not just in America, but across the entire planet.
Yes, yes, absolutely. So in your opinion, then, how can so many people be swept up with the fear and be led astray, ignore real data, and continue on with this charade?
I think data has been limited. Information has been suppressed and has been held back. I mean, I look at even the mainstream media in our local town, which was Tulsa, Oklahoma. You know, we had great success with treating persons who had COVID and been exposed to people that had COVID. Great success. We still haven't got one local story. In over 2.5 years, they won't cover it because the media is driven by the propaganda rhetoric that's driving the bus, and that's driven by Big Pharma, who, by the way, in America, Big Pharma has no liability to the companies. It's been transferred to the United States government, unlike other medications. And so it's a weird dynamic going on, but I just think people are not exposed to information. That's why I'm grateful, you know, for men such as yourself who are stepping up and spreading this. And even with this broadcast right now, one thing you can do, folks, is share this with 10 people and encourage those 10 people to share it with 10 people. This is the way information gets out. And if you'll do that, I mean, seriously, please do that. I'm begging you and pleading you for the safety and the sanctity of this thing called freedom.
Yeah, absolutely. So what are your thoughts regarding this monkeypox virus that Dr. Fauci there is, you know, stirring the pot with and generating more fear? I mean, is there anything to be concerned about here?
Absolutely not. That monkeypox is not transferred from monkeys to people, by the way, just so we'll know. But it's really sort of something that developed in the male homosexual community. And so, you know, key point, if you're males out there, don't have sex with other males. I think that that's probably a good safety mechanism. You know, number two, don't worry about it. It's nothing more than another fear-mongering attempt to get us to fall into line of obedience like good peasants that we are.
Right, right. So shifting gears here, and we touched on it earlier, I understand that the CCP or CCP-backed agents have been purchasing significant tracts of farmland in America, including by their sycophant Bill Gates. You've identified some 300,000 acres in the state of Oklahoma that has been purchased recently. How is this being allowed? And to me, is this not a matter of national security?
Totally. There's over 300,000 acres purchased at least in Oklahoma, which is more per capita than any other state in these United States. Further, in the whole United States, there's well over 40 million acres purchased by the CCP. And it's done under the guise many times of this idea of legalized medical marijuana, which is nothing more now in many states as recreational ability to get high under the idea that I have anxiety. We've talked about that earlier. And so it's really a problem that has global significance. And it's the CCP strategically, and I will say brilliantly strategically, using their cash money that we fed communism by outsourcing all of our goods and services of production, and we make them rich, and they're using that cash money that we pay back in to make cash purchases of land, and it's destroying the country, destroying North America from the inside out.
Interesting. Yeah, and of course, the CCP have written statements in terms of their, you know, what they're calling total war. And the fentanyl issue really is a lesson they learned from the British with the opium wars, you know, several 150 years ago now. So it's, you know, kind of a bit of our own medicine coming back to haunt us here. Are you familiar with the 2003 speech by the CCP's now retired defense minister, Chi Hao-chen? I mean, it's a lengthy speech, and if you take the time to read it, I mean, it's bone chilling, and it should concern every citizen in the world. You know, what are your thoughts on that, and why are people, why isn't this in the news, and why isn't this being taken more seriously?
Well, I think America in general is in bed with the CCP. I think it's in bed economically. I think it's in bed with other communist ideologies, and that speech really should be played, dissected, laid out to every single student, at least in high school and even college. It should be taught in all law schools because many of our lawyers here end up being politicians. And frankly, it should be played on the floor of Congress instead of this January 6th insurrection hearing. Play it. You have your experts, CNN, Fox, and CNBC, analyze it. Talk about it. Make it public. That's what I would like to see done with that speech.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, we're seeing, you know, one of their talks is, you know, they can't use nuclear arms against America, otherwise the land will be uninhabited. So it's better to do it via immigration and purchasing up the land. I mean, it's happening all in front of our face. And yet, you know, most people are, and you know, it's a whole sort of xenophobic argument. Well, that's ridiculous. If somebody's trying to invade or steal your home, regardless of what race, creed, or color they are, you have a duty or an obligation to resist that, not welcome it and come up with some woke ideology to, you know, decide or to rationalize why it's okay. I mean, it's absurd.
Well, that's what it is, isn't it? They want to brainwash us to believe that what is it's like the idea of narcissistic behavior, in a sense, if you kind of use that parallel. A narcissist will always make it your fault. They'll always project back on you, it's your fault. So that's what's happening. And it does lead, truly, my discussion earlier about the love of money, ego, fame, power. It's all about them. It's all about them. And you're seeing it from many politicians, even in America. You know, they'll never accept responsibility. They always pass it down to somebody else. They'll shift the blame. And it's always their fault. I didn't know about it. You know, blah, blah, blah. Well, that's that same strategy is happening. And Americans need to wake up, yes, really, yes. Because if we're not woken up, and I'm talking Canadians and everybody else around the world, wake up, folks. Protect your home right now. Protect your backyard and protect your future.
Yeah. And I'd certainly say that, you know, I think the weaponization of the term CCP, I think, is also disingenuous, because there's another, you know, there's a cabal behind all this, the global technocrats who, you know, since the formation of the Trilateral Commission there in 74 and the Carter administration, which was kind of Biden number one, this has been the course of action that's been laid since then that we're, you know, presently unraveling. Some of the recent stuff that I see coming out of China, which, you know, there's now tanks guarding banks and people haven't been able to access their accounts sometimes in as long as a year. I'm beginning to wonder, and of course, the news that comes out of China is very much curtailed and censored. I'm beginning to wonder, between the economic malaise that the pandemic caused, you know, combined with other factors, I wonder if these globalists aren't also beginning to cause the implosion of China. Because obviously the more disharmony there is and the more chaos there is, these people will be able to seek power through the chaos. I think the average Chinese person living in China is not much different than the average person living in America or Canada. They're merely pawns in this big game, and the that higher level that's seeking to control or controlling both sides and seemingly with equal success.
Yeah, and that's why, you know, broadcasts such as this, information such as this is really only source, really, of it in the whole world. This is it right here. This is what we're getting, and this is what we're hanging on to. The typical Chinese citizen is not going to be allowed to hear this broadcast. It won't work. You know, maybe you might get one or two through, but you'll be in trouble and probably end up going to prison and probably dying if you share this broadcast in Canada or in China. So you're right. The people of the world, and I've been all over this world. I've been able to speak in seven or six continents, all but one, you know, and I met many, many people, and I don't care who you are or who they are. I met some amazing people that, you know, that don't even believe in God like I do. Right. And they're just people, man. In all of us, there is that essence of right and wrong and morality and ethics, I believe. But this globalist mentality want to take it all away from all of our people. All of us earthlings, as we like to say.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. So how is America going to rid itself of the Biden crime family and the rest of the cabal, which is hell-bent on destroying the greatest nation on earth? What's the pathway forward there?
You know, I think it's going to be tough, but ideally it is not from the top down. It's from the bottom up. I'm encouraging all patriots to get out and, you know, vote. get out. You know, typically only one in five registered voters vote. People are disenfranchised. They really are. That's the key to that, right? They don't care anymore because they don't trust it because the elections have been compromised. We all know that. But the bottom line is we have got to participate on a local and state level. That's how you save it. You develop these little colony concepts, once again called states, that are so tight that they have their own, you know, even militia, you know, kind of concept. They have their own National Guard that's not really controlled by the federal government anymore. And you have these little states. I think that 1775-6 concept is the only thing that we have to hang on to. And I believe that's the key answer to the preservation of the Republic and also the prevention of the continued growth and power of the overreaching tyrannical totalitarian leadership.
Yeah, very good. Very good. And so then what is your message to the younger people that seem to be so captured by this leftist, socialist and woke ideology?
Be open to other ideas. Don't believe what you see or hear on TV. Don't get clouded and don't get, just hear my heart. Just listen carefully. Always before you make a decision on what hill you're going to die on, get all sides of the information about that hill and then make a good decision. Don't believe it just because you hear it on mainstream media. The young people need to go also spend some time with older people and ask them things like, what have you learned? What have you seen? And by doing those two things, seeking a well-rounded education from all sides, including this side right here, and going backwards and checking in with grandparents, maybe go down to a nursing home sometime and just talk to people. That's the key to keeping our young people at least grounded with the opportunity to go forward with faith and freedom.
Excellent idea. So let's switch gears here to the Functional Medical Institute. The leading question here is, you know, what in your opinion has created the horrible healthcare and hospital care system that we see in America today?
The pharmaceutical control of education in the physician arena. Not that drugs are bad. We've never said that. But we need to become less dependent upon them, and drugs should not be the first line therapy. That's the biggest disconnect right there. And that is happening. People like us, Michael, my wife and I mean, we're looked at in America and really around the world like weirdos, like radicals. People look at us like we've lost our mind. We're too strict. But all we've talked about is in our business principle is seven principles: nutrition, sleep, stress management, movement, the four we have control over. And then we look at genetics, we look at hormone activation, hormone presence, and peptides. And then we have an overarching theme that's two-pronged: emotional and spiritual health. And by putting those nine things together, emotional, physical, spiritual, we see people get well. They get off medications, they get reversal of common disease processes, and that's just not taught. I mean, we have physicians come to us that are super sick. And the statement is said about us many, many times. And I'm just putting us here as an example. You know, we're not any better than anybody else. But they say, you guys are the only doctors that I've ever seen that actually look and are healthy.
That's an interesting statement. And certainly, you know, both you and your wife are a very handsome and attractive couple there. And I mean, you're living the talk, right? I mean, and that's a very fair statement that you see so many of these physicians, you know, with the gut, or they're, you know, see high blood pressure, and they're not. To me, a physician should be the epitome of health. Even if you're an older person, there's no reason for you to be looking like you're falling apart. And unfortunately, a lot of times that's that dependence on the pharmaceutical products and a complete abandonment of this other important factors in health. So in your opinion, then, to what degree has trust been eroded in the healthcare system and the respective governing agencies?
It's gone. It's completely gone. You know, I talk to people every day that it's got so bad, they're afraid to go to the hospital, even for emergencies. You know, that's terrible. That's where we are right now. People don't trust the big medicines, as I call it, and they shouldn't. But there are good people out there, and realize that most of the physicians, everybody's individual, but some of them are caught just in the system like a captive. They want to do better. They just don't know how to get out, because what are you going to do with no income? How are you going to stand up against that? How are you going to pay for your kids' university bills or college bills. I mean, so we need to exhibit a little bit of sympathy and find physicians that you can trust, that can talk to and talk with you. And when you do, refer them to other people so we can keep the network kind of moving with physicians that really want to help and really push the business away from those that really don't want to help.
Sure, sure. So to those that still believe in big pharma, big medicine, and that government are championing their health and well-being and the very survival, what are some questions that you would have those people answer?
If it works, if they believe that, my question is, well, how come obesity went from only minimal, probably 60 years ago, to now where many, many states are above 60% obese? It's predicted that by 2050, 100% of the population in the United States of America will be obese or overweight. If it's working so well, then how come we still have 1.3 million people dying every year of cancer and heart disease? If it's working so well, then why are the trends of diseases growing faster than people are being born? If it's working so well, why are 1 in 2 Americans right now insulin resistant or type 2 diabetic? And if it's working so well, why is it predicted that 1 in 2 Americans born in 2050 will have a condition called autism? And I could go on and on, but these questions should be asked of self and asked towards that entity. And when you answer them, you're going to realize something. It hasn't worked for 5 decades. So what are we doing listening to it? And why are we not seeking? I don't even call it alternative care. I call it conventional care, what my wife and I do. That stuff's alternative. It's only been around 120 years, right? What my wife and I do has been around since the beginning of time. It's called giving the body what it needs. And the body can do what it does.
Yeah. And on that point, I mean, the human body has a tremendous resilience to heal itself, given the capacity to do so. I mean, get out of the way and let the intrinsic properties of the body take charge. From your practice, I'm sure you've seen many people that come in the door that are, you know, sick, fat, and nearly dead. What's somebody who enters in your practice? I mean, is it really just that sort of the fundamental, you know, aligning those sort of spiritual values, getting them on a healthy, wholesome diet and getting some level of exercise? I mean, is that as simple as it is to offer transformational change?
You know, it is. By doing those basic things, it's not complicated. And you got to have a little bit of coaching and encouragement with it. But by doing those things with 100% certainty, not 99.9, but 100% certainty, you're going to see life improve. And the majority of the time, vast majority of the time, these disease conditions that you've always went out and want to know what's wrong with you, they get reversed.
Yeah, and that's such a hopeful statement. I mean, as you say, if we have 60% of the American people in this disease condition, which is self-inflicted and through bad choices and, of course, bad oversight by the authorities, but that provides tremendous hope. If I'm feeling crappy, there is a very simple process for me to get well. And I think that, you know, that is a message of hope. And in, you know, today's world here where it seems so chaotic and so hopeless, you know, people can make fundamental changes within themselves, and maybe that spreads and becomes infectious in terms of that mentality.
I can hope so. You know, on my my wrist right now, actually, you can probably see a little blue band. It actually says two words that I hope people can get and embrace and become. It says hope dealer. You know, we need to begin to deal hope to the world, because what I just said is not, you know, it's not rocket science, as the old saying goes, but it does work. And people do get better. And if what you're doing is not working, try it this way and you'll see that you'll get results.
Yeah, very good. That's very empowering. So should this unsettling and unfortunate chapter in human history serve as a strong reminder that one's health is one's own responsibility, and that ultimately healthy lifestyle choices and regular exercise and a healthy diet are far more important than a doctor's prescription pad?
Oh my gosh. I mean, you couldn't have said that question and phrased it much better. Yes, yes, and all caps YES, without question.
Yeah, very good. And so, Dr. Sherwood, are we what we're witnessing today in the world? Is this truly a battle, a spiritual battle of good over evil and light versus dark unfolding before our eyes?
It is. It's the battle that is as old as time is old. There's always spiritual forces even emotional forces of evil. There's always spiritual forces and emotional evil of good. Some would say it's God versus Satan. Some would say it's good versus evil. And some would say it's just good versus bad. The bottom line is, we see this in movies. There's always that good versus evil theme that people love to watch. Good can win. It's been said, this quote, and it's been part of my life many times, evil wins when good people do nothing. But when good people do something, evil never has a chance. And I hope people really embrace that and begin to become activated and begin to take care of themselves in all areas.
That's again another empowering statement. And would you then agree that now more than ever, we need to reject division and separation and come together fully as earthlings and move beyond tribalism and race-based division?
Yeah, look, there's one race. It's called the human race. And I really, I don't really care if somebody lives in Africa or lives in Mexico. Look, they are a fellow human being. Human being. We got to come together. We've got to find leaders that can rally the troops of morality, sensibility, and ethics once again. Just with that said, and we have got to quit looking at each other with trying to find out what's wrong and what we hate about somebody else. Find the common good. And it's going to be free. It's going to be found in freedom. It is. It's going to be found in faith. And it's going to be found in physical wellness. It really is. Those are the things. And maybe you could also think about, you know, financial ability, like having enough to pay your bills, right? And that's where it's found. And that's what we have to begin to do for each other. And it's not about just making sure everybody has a handout. It's about making sure everybody understands the key principle. If you don't work, you don't eat. You need to find the ability to contribute in that, which is your why. And then you earn a wage for that. And then you begin to bond together with people like that. And that's how you make a difference in the world.
Yeah, very good. Yeah, and certainly, you know, here in Canada, the rhetoric coming from the leadership is just that. It's, you know, what can I do to hand out or give you something so you don't have to do anything? And you know, even as a life purpose, if we have all these young people sitting around collecting a government check, you know, what is your life purpose? I mean, that's going to lead to depression without question, because they're, you know, your life is purpose, is without purpose and without meaning. And that's dangerous. You know, it's we need to have people being able to explore their abilities and develop their skills and aptitudes and be in service of others. Otherwise, what do we have? We have nothing here.
No, and if people are taught to become dependent upon the government of any country for food, shelter, protection, sustenance, drugs, etc., look, you're becoming nothing more than a dog that's dependent upon someone to give you dog food. You don't have the ability to provide for yourself anymore, and that's the worst place to be. That's called bondage, and that's called tyranny.
Yeah, and certainly, you know, unfortunately, in this country, that's the path that it seems we're headed. And, you know, there's an overwhelming majority of people that think that's just a fine way to do things. And, you know, of course, at some point, where does this wealth come from? Well, it's imaginary. And at some point, you will be, you know, in the salt mine doing a 14-hour day to earn far less than what you're getting for your handout now, because that's going to be the reality of that totalitarian society.
That's right. And your privileges will be restricted based upon your cooperation and behavior or lack thereof. So keep that in mind. You're trajecting down a line of, if you obey, we'll give you this, but if you don't, we'll take it away. And so that's where that's going. And we really need to be on guard of that, aware of that, and prepare right now to stand against it.
Yeah, absolutely. So what is your message then to the medical professionals of the world that remain silent and continue to be complicit in this ongoing pandemic fraud?
If you know the truth and you know what is right to do and you don't do it, you are the problem. You are the main issue. My advice to you is follow some anatomical analogies. Have a backbone. Stand up. Come what may, stand up. And the more of you that stand up and the more of you that step up and speak up, your voices will be heard. Maybe it's you. Maybe it's you that has to lead the way, just like I used to do on the SWAT team. Maybe it's you that has to go in the door first. Do that. And you'll find out quickly, like I have, it might not be the majority that's behind you, but there will be thousands and thousands and millions of people that are going to support what you do, and you'll inspire somebody else.
Yeah, that's a powerful statement, sir. So how can we prevent such abuses of power in the future? You know, when the authorities start telling us that there's a new variant coming down or a new virus and everybody's got to put on a mask and stay at home, you know, what's your response to that? How do we prevent that from happening again?
Mass, peaceful, respectful, non-compliance. And the key word, the first one I say is mass. Mass begins with one person standing up, talking to another and asking them, will you stand with me? And when we stand up against it in mass, we will overwhelm them. I really believe, Michael, that around this world, there's more people than probably we know that will stand up if given the right encouragement to stand up, and they'll do it peacefully.
Very good. Very good. And then a couple last questions here for you, Dr. Sherwood. What's the best advice you've ever received personally, and then secondly, professionally?
Personally would be predictable. Get a habitual life pattern. Do those small habits every day. I get up and begin my day with, you know, some prayer and meditation, and I'll go exercise and I spend time with my wife. I do all that. Then I go to work and I have a very good schedule. I stay on time. I let my yes be yes and my no be no. And then I go to bed and get some rest. And I follow all the principles I talked about earlier. Within the sort of the idea of health. But it's really about being predictable. Small baby steps lead to large achievements and commitments. When you get too chaotic and begin to chase shiny balls, that gets you off course. From a professional standpoint, I learned this, and I hope people catch this. Every single person you talk to, and this is probably crossing the line and personal too, you look them in the eye and you do your darndest best to make sure that they believe that they're the most important person in your world right now. And when you do that, you'll make the world a better place.
Great, great. Excellent, sir. And if listeners would like to learn more about you and your work, where would I direct them?
They can go to Sherwood.tv and everything kind of filters from there. We've got, you know, all of our books and movies, and we can work with anybody. You know, we've even got people we work with in Canada, which is awesome. So we just want to be a blessing to people, Michael. That's it. So Sherwood.tv.
All right. Fantastic, sir. Well, it's been a great time conversing with you here this morning. I appreciate all your thoughts and your time today, and look forward to meeting you sometime in the future here. Next time
Absolutely.
I'm down your way. Super.
Absolutely.
Fantastic, sir. You have yourself a great day, and God bless.
God bless you too, Michael. Thank you.
Cheers. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.